Welcome back to Prophecy Today. I'm Jimmy DeYoung Jr., and it's good to be with you. You know, for so many years, we have been going to the heart of Israel, or the center part of Israel, to Shiloh, to talk to our good friend, Winky Medad. Chag Sameach, Winky.
Chag Sameach. Thank you very much for calling.
After all these years, a question that comes in from time to time is your official name is Yisrael Medad, but how did you get the nickname Winky?
Well, my family name, that of my father, was Winkelman. It's a European name. For those who maybe know Dutch, Winkel is a corner, or actually a grocer, I guess by transference. Usually the grocer was on the corner, right?
Mm-hmm.
And for those who don't know, it was only about 250 years ago that Jews in Europe were asked to begin to take surnames.
Mm.
Up until then, we were basically either known by profession or son of father, like Johnson was the son of John, you know, something like that.
Right.
But I don't know exactly why specifically that name was handed down. I had a copy of a 1890s passport, I think, of my grandfather. It was listed as Winkelman in an area that's now in the western Ukraine. And my father was known as Winky as growing up. And I became Winky Jr. for a while, and then I became Winky in my own right.
Just as I'm Jimmy Jr., and now we finally know Winky, where Winky came from. So, calling you today, and just after 25 hours of the holiest day of the year for the Jewish people, for those that don't know, can you explain to us what the 25 hours and after were about?
Well, we have a 10-day period, usually in the fall, usually somewhere in September. As we all know, the Hebrew calendar, of course, does not fall exactly in line with the lunar calendar of Gregorian. And it starts off with Rosh Hashanah, the new year, which is actually the holiday of blowing of the shofar. But we have turned it into a 10-day penitential season. And the 10th day of the Hebrew month of Tishrei is a full 25-hour fast, in which we spend, those, of course, were much more observant, okay, a lot of time in the synagogue. The prayers are longer. There's a lot more added in terms of, I guess it's similar to some sort of form of confession, which is repeated, in which sins are enumerated and forgiveness is asked. And there is a custom also to dress in white, as if we accept upon ourselves a possible position of being in shrouds. Mm. Very symbolic, of course. That's, of course, the Orthodox more than anybody else. And now that we've come out of it, besides being just a little bit hungry, we have to start to get prepared for the next big holiday, which we call in Hebrew Sukkot, or the holiday of the booths, maybe is a good translation, when we also wave about the palm frond and the citron fruit, which we call the etrog. So actually the whole month of Tishrei, the Hebrew month of Tishrei, starting with Rosh Hashanah, Yom Kippur, and Sukkot, there's a lot of eating, a lot of fasting, and a lot of praying, but also a lot of joy.
Yeah, I like that. Food, fellowship, and fun, really, as far as everything that you're doing during this time. Well, for those that are listening, and maybe this is the first time, I know that for most Christians that listen, understand that the Day of Atonement, or Yom Kippur, listed in the book of Leviticus chapter 16, Leviticus chapter 23. First of all, two questions. One, how much of Israel now participates in Yom Kippur?
Well, for those who haven't been here during Yom Kippur, in a certain sense, a lot of the country simply shuts down. All our radio and television services are off.
Mm.
Airspace is closed down. There's no public transportation. And for those who've been here, there are bicycles all on the highways, which can be dangerous at times, but that's what it is. I don't know the figures, Jimmy, but I can say it's growing year by year. The people who are assuming the obligations of fasting and visiting the synagogue, even if it's for the beginning prayer,
mm-hmm.
so that the Kol Nidre prayer, which is very mournful tune is very stirring. And so many people come into the synagogue for the beginning and for the end when the shofar is blown. And it's like the height, you know, where people get very almost ecstatic in hoping for forgiveness and a good year. As for the fasting, I'm not going to say many people, but I'm saying in the area of about maybe 40 to 50% now are assuming the fast, even if they go to the beach maybe. But there are certain things that people pick and choose.
You know, there are a lot more Christians today taking on this festivals, the festivals that were provided in the Bible to the Jewish people. Do you see a benefit for Christians to be involved in something like the Day of Atonement or Yom Kippur or any of the other festivals?
Well, if you ask me to put on my theological hat now rather than political and sociological, let's all remember that Jesus grew up as a Jew. And so for people who would like to see in him a spiritual leader and a symbol and someone who's very important in their lives, they should remember that what we do is basically what he did.
Mm-hmm.
So the assumption of various customs is good up until a certain point, to a point where if you have accepted the Christian faith, you are Christian. If you are the Jewish faith, you're Jewish. Can we share ethics and morals and things of this nature? Yes, we can. But I, if you ask me straight on, I would say up until a certain point, because otherwise people might get mixed up who is who and what is what.
Exactly.
And each one should make their choice and feel proud of their choice and do as much as possible within their religious choice. But up until, as I said, a certain point.
Good answer. I appreciate that. We are going to have a discussion about that later on with our resident Christian theologian, Dave James. So, Winky, we're looking at the one-year anniversary of the Abrahamic Accords. What's your thoughts 1 year in?
Well, 1 year in is, of course, from what I see on Twitter and I read in the paper, there's a tremendous amount of travel going back and forth. There are businesses and commercial adventures and entrepreneurial startups that are moving along that prove that even if you are Arab and Muslim, it doesn't mean you have to be against the state of Israel. There can be peace. There can be relationships. There can be understanding. And I will admit, of course, that the countries of who made the peace within the Abrahamic Accords were not at war with Israel. And maybe they were smart enough not to start a war with Israel 70 years ago. Maybe things would have been better if people would have accepted Israel in 1947-48, mm-hmm. Which is probably a good lesson for the people who are trying to, if I can use the phrase, dish these peace accords. And they prove that if people can feel comfortable and can advance scientifically, commercially, hygiene-wise, there are all sorts of things that we're involved with between these countries and Israel that I think it's about time that some of the other countries stop trying to champion a lost cause and encourage the Arabs who call themselves Palestinians to make peace too.
The Israeli ambassador to the United Nations, Gilad Erdan, he basically said that not only was part of it about climate change, but to form a regional alliance to have a controlled effort against the threats in the Mideast, which right now happens to be Iran. Do you see this proceeding forward?
I do see it moving forward. Look, we cannot avoid the political and the security. And it's obvious that there were certain states that had their heads above water and saw the danger and realized that they're on the wrong side of the fence, and Israel is on the right side of the fence. Even to the extent that I think people realize that even Saudi Arabia, which is a lot more fundamentalist from a religious point of view than the states of Dubai and the Emirates and stuff like that, are also seeking ways of finding out how to do something with Israel because the threat of Iran, what we call the Shiite versus the Sunni in the Muslim world, comes up with, maybe the enemy of my enemy could be my friend, and that is Israel. And Israel has a good relationship with the United States. So we can't avoid that. That's also part of geopolitics of a global nature and regional stability. If everybody would be believing in God and believing in good, we wouldn't have wars. Obviously, there's something that has to, there's a minus somewhere that has to be corrected into a plus. Israel is more than welcome to find its way in the Middle East with people who want to have peace, want to have stability, and want to have economic advancement. And that's one of the keys.
Does it concern you? You mentioned a relationship with the United States. Does it concern you that the Biden administration doesn't even want to use the term Abrahamic Accords?
First of all, I think they have started doing it, actually, because of all the criticism for avoiding the term. I mean, that was very silly. You know, people claim that Democrats have a sort of perhaps higher standard than some of the Republicans do from the former president on down, and I don't think they do. I think they could be just as bad as anybody. And I think this is one of the cases where even when they were asked point blank at press briefings, they sort of squirmed out of the needs to answer that. But I think now they're doing it because it's the first anniversary and it's kind of sort of, you know, that's the name of the cause. I mean, you know, it's really difficult. Look, in previous discussions, we've always discussed the fact that Israel is not that happy with the Department of State and the White House perspective on things here. We have to hope that we can politic better and they would understand better what the needs are, not only of Israel, but for the region as a whole.
And this is not the first time that you've gone up against the State Department and the administration of the president. Well, finishing up this week on reflecting on the holiest day of the year, there's been a couple of opinion pieces that have gone around, and we all know how we feel about opinions. But one of those has to do with Jerusalem's most sacred piece of property being a place of peace. And this happens to come not from a Islamic or Muslim Jewish perspective, but from a Jewish perspective against other Jews. Do you see this as a potential problem in the future, as far as there are Jews that don't want to go up and they're criticizing the Jews that do want to go up and pray on the Temple Mount?
Jimmy, it would be almost a joke to tell you that 3 or 4 days ago, one of the heads of the Reform Jewish movement in the United States, and now I see the head of the public affairs unit of the Agudat Yisrael, which is the ultra-Orthodox, both of them coming out against a Jewish presence on the Temple Mount, calling it provocative. Calling it provocative means you allow the Muslims to define what is a provocation. You do not exist. You must react to their being insulted, to them being provoked. And that is no way, whether it's religion, whether it's business, or whether it's politics or military affairs, to allow one side only to define what is a provocation. I would think that Jews, Christians, and Muslims praying either at different times and, of course, different places on the Temple Mount would be a great vision of peace. And in fact, if I'm not mistaken, there was a Hebrew prophet by the name of Isaiah who basically wrote that in chapter 2, all the nations of the world coming to the Temple Mount in prayer. So I think credit is credit due. We showed the way, and I do think that religion has a role in peacemaking, but not if you are only within your religion, but understanding of the needs and the contributions of other religions as well for things like peace and security. And so, as you said, those opinion pieces, sometimes there are opinions and sometimes there are facts. Don't mix up the two.
Don't mix up the two is exactly right. Winky, we see, and when you were talking about the percentage of Israel observing Yom Kippur, also in the past you've talked about the awareness of what they're doing on the Temple Mount to bring awareness to the Jewish people. Do you see that still progressing?
Jimmy, there was an article, I think 2 days ago, in the Haaretz magazine, or my newspaper, I should say, properly. And we all know, or those who do know, Haaretz is extremely left and liberal, in which he pointed out that he went up 6 times in the past month for the story, and he said, unbelievable, the ascent to the Temple Mount of Jews has become mainstream and not the property or, the sphere of only some small group of Jews who are shouting about something. So it's growing over the years. We've been discussed on this on your program and on this program with your father, late father, too. All the progress and consciousness raising has been going on. And I always said, be patient, give us time. Things are growing, and I think that's what it is.
Amen, amen to that. Well, we're looking forward to more of an awareness as we keep moving forward. And we're also looking forward to someday being able to come back to Israel to visit the Temple Mount along with Jews and Muslims, and to visit not only just the Temple Mount, the holy city of Jerusalem, but all of Israel. Winky, thank you so much. Chag Sameach to you and your family. And hopefully we'll talk next week or after Sukkot.
Okay, thank you very much again for having me on, and the best to you and our listeners.